messed that up. Can you tell it's our first show back for the semester? It's close to 6 o'clock, and you're listening to Brain Matters, the official radio show of the UA Counseling Center. We are broadcasting live from the WVUA FM studio, 90.7, the Capstone, on the campus of the University of Alabama. Good evening. My name is Dr. B.J. Gunther, and I'm the host of the show. In case you don't know, the show is about mental health and physical health. Sometimes we talk about physical health. Benefit college students, in particular UA students, and you can listen to us live each Tuesday night at 6 p.m. on 90.7, the Capstone, or online at wvuafm.ua.edu, and you can download the Crimson White app and click on 90.7 live streaming. Excuse me, I just can't get it out tonight. Tonight we'll be taking questions via email, so if you have a question for our guest or myself, email those to brainmattersradio@wvuafm.ua.edu, and I'll be checking it periodically and hopefully get to some of those questions. Let me remind you, the show is not a call-in show as of yet, but it may be sometime soon, and I keep saying that every year. This is our fourth year. Jordan, can you believe that? This is our fourth year. Jordan, you've been with us 2 years, right? He's my production assistant, but he's also a psychology trainee at the Counseling Center and all over, basically. But this isn't a call-in show, so I ask you don't call into the station because we won't answer the phone. And, you know, if you have questions, email those to us. And I just gave you the address. It's brainmattersradio@wvuafm.ua.edu. I just paused there for a minute. It's been a long day. Tonight's show is an interesting one that people have been asking me to do for a little while, and I don't know why we haven't focused just on this topic. We've done shows before on anxiety, generalized anxiety, and I think even last spring we did a show just on panic attacks. But this is a topic that is so pertinent to many students, and some students are even embarrassed to talk about it, but it's test anxiety. And I have a lot of students who ask me, like, basically, they want a quick fix for something that has been affecting them for a long time, probably since middle school, possibly. But I've got one guest tonight. Usually, I like to have one or two guests, but tonight is Dr. Matt Jarrett. Dr. Jarrett is an assistant professor of psychology, and I looked at your website today to do a little bit of research on this show. Man, you have done a lot, especially in the area of ADHD.
No, thank you.
I bet when people see that, you can go to his website, and I'll give that out if you don't mind at the end of the show. You can go to his website and see all the research and the interest in ADHD. First of all, tell us, thanks for being on the show.
No problem.
Why the interest in ADHD?
So after I finished my undergraduate degree, I worked
at Virginia Tech.
Go Hokies. So I worked at Duke University Medical Center for 2 years, and this was after finishing undergraduate. I didn't really know much about ADHD at the time, and I was working on a research project of kids who were treated for ADHD mm-hmm. at 9 or 10 years old, and I was following them up in their teen years, 14, 15. And at the time, like I said, I didn't know much about ADHD. But I was really surprised by how many of the kids that were coming in also were having problems with issues like anxiety and depression.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of research on ADHD and problems that co-occur with it related to conduct problems, oppositional behavior, but there was really less focused on internalizing problems like anxiety and depression.
Uh-huh.
So I got a lot of interest in that area, and in graduate school started studying that area, trying to think about how can we better understand why kids with ADHD, and now adults too, have trouble with anxiety, depression. How can we go about treating
because a lot of times it is masked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like vice versa. Anxiety can be masked by ADHD and vice versa.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what's complicated sometimes is trying to sort out, does someone have, let's say, attention problems because
mm-hmm.
they have anxiety,
mm-hmm.
And it's secondary to the anxiety, or do they truly have maybe two problems in that they legitimately have ADHD, but they also have problems with anxiety?
Did you ever figure out, or what was the conclusion to what was causing that, you know, when they would come in, what was the large majority of what was causing it?
So there's probably a number of different reasons why we see ADHD and anxiety co-occurring. Probably from a genetic standpoint, we know that both of these things tend to run in families. Mm-hmm. The other piece of this, too, is that we know that ADHD is very much a regulatory problem. It's a disorder where people have trouble regulating behavior, impulses. But I think what's now being studied more is this difficulty with regulating emotions. And people are now really starting to recognize more that ADHD involves a lot of trouble with regulating emotions. And if you're somebody that just tends to be prone to negative emotions, whether it be anger, sadness, anxiety, mm-hmm. ADHD is associated with often difficulty regulating those things.
You know, one of the issues we have, and I think a lot of campuses have, is overuse of Adderall and mm-hmm. stimulant medication. Have you seen in your research success with not using stimulant medication?
So I think at this point, one of the things I'm really interested in is treatments that can be used often in many cases as complementary treatments to something like stimulant medication. Mm-hmm. Actually, for kids that are under six, the first line treatment that's recommended is behavioral parent training. So working with parents to help yes. better manage those behaviors, that's a first line treatment. After age six, we often have stimulant medication as the first line recommendation. But even, let's say, for college students, many college students find that stimulants might help with certain things, but they have trouble with other things. And so in our lab right now, we're doing a study with mindfulness meditation for college students with ADHD. People are looking at that as a sort of an adjunctive treatment. People are also using specific cognitive behavioral treatments to help with the specific problems of ADHD. So things like organization, planning, time management, yes. many yes. of the issues that college students with ADHD struggle with.
It's difficult sometimes because I'd say test anxiety was right up there with what most students come to the counseling center with, or mm-hmm. there's some level of it. Eventually, when you get to know a student, that usually comes out sometimes. But it seems like so many students either have heard or they feel like, or they've taken a friend's Adderall, and they think that that's the answer to the test anxiety. But not realizing that in the majority of cases, it makes it worse.
Yeah,
so much worse.
I agree. So, you know, I think that there really is a huge issue with the diagnostic process for ADHD, and we probably have a lot of situations where people are getting access to stimulants when, you know, they shouldn't really be taking them. And like you're saying, if you actually have a problem with anxiety, stimulants are likely to make that anxiety mm-hmm. issue worse if that's the primary issue for the difficulty with test anxiety.
You mentioned you went to Virginia Tech, and I was teasing you about that, but because Blacksburg is beautiful. It's just a beautiful area. But tell me a little bit about your background.
Sure. Mm-hmm. So I grew up in Pittsburgh, so I'm a big Steelers fan.
Oh, my gosh.
So.
Oh, he said the magic word. Been a Steelers fan. We could totally do a show.
So I totally understood the football fanaticism when I moved here. So Pittsburgh, it's like Alabama football,
so
distracted. NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Focus. So
here we go.
So I went to Pittsburgh. Here we go. So I grew up in Pittsburgh. I went to Cornell University as an undergraduate in New York. Then I went to Duke University Medical Center that I was describing earlier. Worked there for a couple years mm-hmm. before I started grad school at Virginia Tech. After Virginia Tech, I did my internship at Children's National Medical Center in D.C., and then I came here right after that.
Is that what you were talking about? When we were right before the show, he was telling us about working as. Were you the on-call psychologist at
Yeah,
Washington?
So.
Oh my gosh, I can't imagine what
yeah.
you saw.
So we got to go to the emergency room on call and see a variety of mm-hmm. issues that come through the emergency room.
Tell me a little bit, as far as test anxiety goes, since the show is about test anxiety, how is that related, if it is, to ADHD at all?
So we know that people with ADHD often struggle in a variety of areas, but one of the areas they struggle with often, many times the most, is academic performance.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can imagine if somebody already struggles in that area, they're not going to be very confident, they're going to be concerned
right.
about their performance. And so having ADHD in the first place might lead somebody to have anxiety about their academic performance. Another piece of that is we know that people with ADHD have trouble with what's called working memory. So working memory is kind of being able to keep information in mind. So as I'm talking to you, you're listening to what I'm saying, you're connecting with other things that you've heard of before. People with ADHD have trouble with that. We also know that people with anxiety have trouble with that. So we know that probably in some of our research, we found that people with ADHD and anxiety tend to have even greater problems with working memory. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine you're in this stressful information situation. You're trying to recall information. You're trying to think of the answer.
Yeah, that makes
sense. It might even be more challenging for people with ADHD.
With ADHD. And I'm going to get to the email questions in a minute. If you want to email questions for Dr. Jarrett and Test Anxiety, brainmattersradio@wvuafm.ua.edu, and we'll look at those in just a minute. And then I want to go over the Test Anxiety pamphlet that we have in our waiting room and see what you think about that.
Okay.
Some of the suggestions, because, to be honest, some of the suggestions, how do I say this? You know, when I'm sitting there talking to a student, it's almost like I mentioned in the intro, it's almost like they're impatient. They've gotten to the counseling center at a point to where they're pretty desperate, and they want immediate relief, and it's very hard to convince a student sometimes to practice some of these strategies.
Mm-hmm.
Any suggestions for me?
Well, I think that, like you're describing, I think my sense of this issue is that test anxiety for many people is kind of the tip of the iceberg. So
mm-hmm.
for many people, there might be underlying issues with anxiety in mm-hmm. general. And I think, you know, we can talk more about this as we move along, but I think part of it that I'm a big supporter of is really making sure that all of sort of the basics are in place that are going to make someone successful in a lot of domains, sleep, mm-hmm. physical exercise. There's a emerging body of research that shows especially physical exercise is very effective as a treatment for anxiety,
mm-hmm.
Even problems like depression as well. So just making sure that, I think a lot of college students struggle with this, just basic things like getting enough sleep, getting enough physical exercise, that's going to help with just the baseline anxiety that's there.
And I think, too, to help them understand, it's not like, you know, exercising it necessarily like taking a pill to where it will make it all go away. It's gradual.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to kind of look at it like it's chipping away at that iceberg, you know, and it's getting a little bit better. And it does build your confidence that you're doing something to help yourself that's not just popping a pill.
Yeah.
Now, I will say some people need to pop a pill. They need that. It's extreme anxiety, and I understand that.
But one of the things, the treatment that we know is most effective for problems with anxiety
mm-hmm.
is exposure-based treatment, which means that mm-hmm. if I'm anxious about talking to other people, what I need to do is I need to practice talking with people, getting comfortable with that. So the same idea, I think, with test anxiety is that we would often do this with kids. If a kid has concerns about anxiety related to testing or perfectionism related to tests, we might, in our therapy sessions, actually practice taking tests to get comfortable with being able to deal with anxiety,
mm-hmm.
handle the anxiety, and realize that often many of the things that they think are going to happen don't actually happen when they go through the experience.
It's
so
really irrational.
Yeah. So, you know, that's a separate issue if somebody's truly having, like, panic symptoms during. How you might address that differently. But
mm-hmm.
I think in terms of the issue of being comfortable with a testing environment, it's going to require positive, repeated, successful experiences with testing for a person to feel more confident and less anxious.
That's right. You've probably seen this before since you've worked in a children's medical center, but speaking of exposure therapy, I had a student one time. This is a sidebar, okay, because I do this a lot, but we're fixing to go to a break, so I thought this was a little bit funny. She had an aversion to vomiting. How do you do exposure therapy with that? Exactly.
There are actually recipes you can find to create fake vomit.
Simulated?
Yeah.
Oh, my
that's what you would
gosh.
Do.
Gosh. Oh, okay.
Maybe make it during the break.
On that note, we'll take a break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Brain Matters.
Sleep in the evening, oh Lord. There she comes, only in dreams. She's only in dreams. Oh,
day. This is 90.7 The Catstone.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling and any relationship is created between the show host, our guests, and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are unable to do it, I encourage you to contact the Union Counseling Center at 548-3860. If you are not a union student, please contact your respective campus crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone. I'm BJ Gunther, and tonight we're talking about test anxiety, which I think is such an important topic, especially this early in the semester. I like to choose some topics that will help students before it gets too bad. And when I say gets too bad, that's usually in the middle of October in midterms. Have you ever seen a student become overly anxious in one of your classrooms and you were concerned about them?
Yeah, I've had students in testing situations that I think you could tell were pretty overwhelmed with the circumstances. I've had students that have had issues with anxiety, not necessarily test anxiety, but I have a student I can think of that was very socially anxious and was actually not able to come into the classroom because he was so socially anxious about coming into the environment.
Yeah.
And so I can think of a number of students that I've had conversations with and or maybe referred to the counseling center or somewhere else.
Or the Office of Disability Services.
That's another huge one that I think for students is that if you do have some of these issues with anxiety, if you register with Office of Disability Services, it really helps instructors to know what kinds of accommodations would be helpful for you. For many of the students, I think, that have really significant anxiety who are registered with ODS, you know, they're able to take the test in a quiet location. Mm-hmm. For many students, I think they feel less overwhelmed if it's not in a, I teach classes sometimes that have 225 students.
And the distractions,
so,
too.
Yeah, for many students, it's just, that adds to the anxiety being in such a big environment.
And what classes are you teaching this semester?
I teach a course right now called Teaching of Psychology, so I supervise graduate students that are teaching for the first time, and they teach Psychology 101 sections,
mm-hmm.
So I teach that, and I also do clinical supervision of graduate students that are graduate students in training
that
in
are
our doctoral
out in the
program.
Field.
Yeah, and they're working through our psychology clinic. But at the undergraduate level, I often teach abnormal psychology. That's the one that's usually about 200
that's
students.
That's the one that got me.
Yeah, it's a good.
I mean, it does.
Yeah,
usually,
it's a good course.
I mean, it's always so interesting. I wonder how it's changed over the years. I mean, I haven't gone and sat in a class in a while. What about is anybody doing research over in the department on test anxiety? Is there much need for that, to be honest?
You know, not test anxiety, I'd say specifically, but there are a number of people that study anxiety and anxiety-related problems. In our lab right now, we have a research project through the Child and Adolescent Anxiety Clinic, which is in a specialty clinic in the psychology clinic.
That's on your website.
Yeah. So, child anxiety treatment is actually a type of treatment that can be hard to find because it often involves what we call cognitive behavioral therapy,
mm-hmm.
but also using procedures like gradual exposure. So, often that type of treatment is not available in the community. And so, when I got here and had been here a few years, we had some specialty clinics in this main psychology training clinic.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to start a child anxiety clinic to give students an opportunity to learn to do this type of treatment, but also to provide that type of service in the community. But we have kids as young as 5, so sometimes we have kids that have problems like selective mutism. They might be talking to their parents, but they're not talking to anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Up to, kids that are 16, 17 years old dealing with issues like social anxiety. So what we do for all of these problems is really using exposure. So if I'm going back to selective mutism, if a child is afraid to talk, we have to get them practicing talking in a gradual way. If somebody's afraid to meet new people, talk to new people, we have to practice talking to new people. So that's what we know works well for anxiety.
And it builds the confidence.
And it builds the confidence,
it goes back
exactly.
To building that. You mentioned perfectionism a minute ago before the break. And I just think that is just rampant. On campus, is that the right word? That didn't sound right. A lot of students that I see, you know, they'll describe themselves, and I'll ask them, "Do you feel like you're a perfectionist?" And yes, they do. And it's sometimes difficult to tie the perfectionist to the anxiety. mm-hmm. you know, the perfectionism to the anxiety. But if you can do that, mm-hmm. sometimes then it clicks and they can see, you know?
Yeah.
What do you think is propelling that so much now? Is it the competition?
Well, I think, you know, we have a lot of very highly qualified undergraduate students mm-hmm. at this university and very driven students. And, you know, I think they've also growing up in an environment with a lot of high stakes testing. There's mm-hmm. there's a lot of emphasis on it, performance. And, you know, there's a really interesting body of research. This woman named Carol Dweck has done some really interesting research on how people attribute performance. How do they attribute performance? So if a child does well and they're told they're very smart,
uh-huh.
then when they fail, they tend to think of themselves as not being smart.
Right.
That I don't have this capability. And what Carol Dweck's found in her research is that if you really emphasize the effort, so when a child does well, you say, you know, you must have really worked hard to get that grade. They make the attribution as in relation to their effort. And so when somebody fails, they tend to think, you know, I failed because I didn't put the time in. Uh-huh. I didn't put the effort in.
Uh-huh.
And I think for a lot of kids that are,
uh-huh.
for a lot of kids that are deemed to be smart, which I think a lot of our students coming in, they are talked about in that way. When they first encounter difficulty, which many students do, they might have done very well in high school, but they struggle maybe when they get into college.
Uh-huh.
That
I
it
call
really
hitting the wall.
Yeah,
they do.
It really affects their identity. So instead of thinking, you know what, maybe I need to figure out how to manage my time better, prepare better, study harder. You know, they might often tend to think, well, I've been exposed. I'm not smart.
Yeah. So how do you change that then? I mean, I would think. I mean, it always starts with the parents. But how do you get to start talking like that to a child?
So, you know, I think in Carol Dweck's work, her recommendation is really that parents should praise the effort and not the disposition.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So instead of saying to the child, you know, Johnny, you're so smart, you know, Johnny, great job working hard to study for that test.
Does she recommend that for teachers also?
Yes.
Almost as much or more than the parents.
And that's one of the things she talks about just
mm-hmm.
in terms of education as well. The teachers are probably doing a lot of the same kinds of things. But I think for students, you know, I think part of that is recognizing that your performance is not necessarily a function of just your disposition or what you bring to the table. It can also be improved through your effort.
Funny that you mentioned that. Because in our little handy-dandy pamphlet from the Counseling Center on test anxiety, let's critique it,
mm-hmm.
shall we? One of the things it says is, let me see, I've copied it. Basically, what you make on a test is not a reflection of your self-worth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically what you're saying.
Yeah.
But so many people think it is. I mean, I've had students become suicidal.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have failed a test. Now, I think it goes way deeper than just failing the test. It goes back to disappointing a parent,
mm-hmm.
losing a scholarship. So what do you think about that?
Well, I think my advice for this is I think that, you know, it's good to be thinking about your academic life as one aspect of your life,
mm-hmm.
and that it's important to not put so much emphasis on that you know, that it becomes something that kind of holds you back or is so wrapped up in your identity that
that's the key, though. You're right. It is so wrapped up in their identity, because I don't know what the majority of students are here now at the university on scholarships,
mm-hmm.
but the level of competition is extremely high. I've asked students before, why do you think you're anxious? Why do you think you're perfectionistic? And they've told me it's the competition, because I have to be better than the other students to be able to get a job
mm-hmm.
in the end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what do you say to a student? Not to put you on the spot, because I'm going off script a little bit.
Well, I'd say that I think sometimes, too, a lot of students are working very hard, but they often can probably learn ways to you know, sometimes people that have trouble with test anxiety, part of it is maybe not being prepared for the test.
That's it.
So, you know, going back to what I was mentioning earlier, making sure that you're getting enough sleep, enough exercise, all these sorts of self-care things can also be investments in your ability to do better on your exams
mm-hmm.
and be more prepared.
Yes.
Sometimes it's going to depend on the student, but sometimes students have a lot of anxiety because they're not really prepared for the test. Whereas some students, they're very prepared, but the anxiety still gets in the way.
So just, they do poorly.
Yeah.
And it this is what happened to me in college. This is a disclosure, TMI, but, you know, I felt very prepared. It's not that I wasn't studying, but the block that comes when you do have test anxiety,
mm-hmm.
It's like you fool yourself because after the test, you almost don't know what happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you were prepared.
Mm-hmm.
And so it sets you up for every time you're taking a test, you're afraid that's going to happen every single time.
You know,
you got to break that cycle.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes I think, you know, we can think about why do people have test anxiety. You know, sometimes people have this problem because they had a very negative testing experience,
mm-hmm.
and then they have a lot of anticipatory anxiety about the next exam,
mm-hmm.
and they are kind of worked up about the exam. And so, again, like you're saying, I think you need to have some positive experiences with being able to gradually handle the testing situation.
Yeah.
So going back to what I was saying, if somebody's too anxious maybe to be ready to handle the testing, the full testing experience,
mm-hmm.
maybe even in therapy, maybe we're gradually trying to simulate that. Maybe we're pretending to take a test in therapy in a gradual way so that we're working towards this goal of being able to handle something that's my most anxiety-provoking thing.
Yeah, you know, I've always thought it'd be interesting, and maybe you know of research like this, and I've even asked students before, and maybe we'll need to wait to the break to hear your answer, but about the literal environment of the classroom. Like,
mm-hmm.
does it make you less anxious to sit in the back of the classroom or to sit a certain place in the classroom,
mm-hmm.
or maybe a certain amount of people
mm-hmm.
who are in the classroom? You know,
yeah.
Is there research on that? Hold your thoughts.
We'll
come back. And I keep saying we're going to get to email questions. You can email us questions at brainmattersradio@wvuafm.ua.edu. We'll be right back. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone.
Listening to 90.7 The Capstone, the voice of the University of Alabama.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show host, our guest, and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-363. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company.
Hey, you're back listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone, and we're talking tonight about test anxiety. My guest is Dr. Matt Jarrett. He is an assistant professor over in the psychology department. He also wears several other hats. Tell me the name of the children's
the
ADHD and anxiety clinic.
Yes.
Did I get that right?
So the research program for my lab is called the ADHD and Anxiety Program, and then in a psychology clinic we have the Child and Adolescent Anxiety Clinic.
Okay, so it's in the psych clinic.
Yeah.
Before we went to break, I mentioned how I felt that, and I don't know if there's research on this, how the environment of the classroom affects somebody, whether or not they need to sit a certain place. It's starting to sound a little OCD-ish, isn't it? If they need to sit in a certain place, if they need to have, if the lights affect them, if the sound obviously affects them, how many students are in, other students are in the classroom, the time obviously affects, I hear that a lot, time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they run out of time.
Yeah.
Because they go blank.
Yeah.
Any research that you know of?
Yeah. So I can just think of some, I think some suggestions. And just like I mentioned from my experience, I can think of a student once that had a lot of social anxiety. And so being around so many people was actually what made him really anxious
during the testing
experience. Mm-hmm. It was less about the test, more about being around other people. But my advice with this is, you know, this can often be very sort of individually tailored and depending on the individual person. But if somebody really has a significant problem with anxiety, you know, if they register with Office of Disability Services, you know, when students come to me, I talk with them about what's going to be helpful to you. And they can tell me, you know, I think it'd be helpful for me if I could be in a quiet room, in a separate space, have a little bit extra time. But I think instructors need to also know that. So students, I've also had students that have come to talk to me that weren't registered with ODS and were just saying, you know, I'm having trouble with this. And then they went through the channels to get registered with ODS, and they were able to have these formal accommodations, going over to have a quiet, independent spot.
And I think some students are really scared to do that. They're scared to approach their professors. Even at this level, you know, they're scared that they're going to be seen as not being honest or just making it up or just making an excuse. And it's just unbearable for them to go through this. And if they made just a few changes, they would probably increase their grades, you know, improve their grades by so much.
Yeah.
You know? Okay, let's take an email question. This person wants to know, hold on, let me get to my emails again. We kind of touched on this earlier. When I go to take a test, I get really nervous and my mind just goes blank. I can't remember anything I've studied. How can I deal with this?
So I think, you know, if you're talking about problems sort of in the moment, there are approaches like deep breathing that one can practice to get more effective at sort of calming down your physiological response. I mentioned earlier approaches like mindfulness, meditation, things like that. I actually have something on my phone that's just a little audio script that you can do a brief 5-minute meditation. You could do a you can find audio files out there that are just like relaxation scripts that are short things that you could even listen to on your headphones while you're waiting outside of a classroom.
Yeah.
So I think the idea is, you know, there are some things you can do in the moment to try to calm your physiology down. In addition, I think if you're somebody that's very anxious at the beginning of the test, you know, you might take a few minutes to do some of these things to help kind of calm, whatever's going to be helpful for you to help calm yourself down a bit before you jump in to the test. Maybe even starting with, what are the things that I know to begin with here, and waiting a bit to hold off on those more difficult questions until you can kind of acclimate to the testing environment. But as far as longer-term strategies, like I've mentioned earlier, I think all these things about, I think, just general self-care, sleep, exercise, all those things help with just your baseline stress reactivity.
Mm-hmm. And caffeine intake, too.
I think people with anxiety issues often have to be careful with that. You know, if you're somebody who's very sensitive to that, you might decide to not have caffeine before your exam, even though you think it's going to help. It might actually make your anxiety worse.
It might make it so much worse. Hey, let's critique a little bit of the suggestions for test anxiety control from our pamphlet.
Okay.
And you tell me what you think. I think some of the things you mentioned are in here, but there's some different ones. Tell yourself I can be anxious later. Now is the time to take the exam. Do you think that works? Do you think people would really do that?
Probably easier said than done.
Yeah, I think so too. I think you really have to be very, very disciplined to be able to do that.
Yeah, I think it's a difficult thing in the moment to do.
Focus on answering the question, not on your grade or others' performances. Well, I think that's another issue where it is easier to read this sentence than it, I mean, if
I think what's important is, you know, one of the things I was mentioning earlier is we know that people that have anxiety, especially when they're anxiety-provoking situations, they have trouble with being able to think clearly, just like this person described, feeling like my mind's going blank. So it's often hard to make these kinds of appraisals like, oh, well, I shouldn't worry about this. It's hard to do that in the moment. So what might be most helpful is making sure that you get yourself calmed down before you go into that testing environment.
I think that's why a lot of people have issues with public speaking, too, because they get so anxious that they get their thoughts all jumbled up.
Yeah, but just like public speaking, you know, you might be nervous the first 5 minutes, 10 minutes, but your anxiety tends to drop the further you get into it. And it's going to be the same with the testing environment. So if you can make it through that initial period where you're feeling anxious, you're probably going to see that your anxiety is going to drop the longer that you stay in that situation.
Yeah, and then you tell yourself, I'm doing this.
Yeah.
I can handle this. I only have 5 more minutes.
Definitely. Whatever.
Counter negative thoughts with other more valid thoughts like, I don't have to be perfect.
Again, I think hard to do in the moment.
Very hard to do right then. Mm-hmm. And most people want something that they can grasp right then in the moment. Like, the minute that they go blank and they start to panic, what can they do in that moment, you know?
But these kinds of things you bring up, I think, are often things that can be addressed in treatments like cognitive behavioral therapy where, you know, we might work with somebody and they say, it's important for me to be perfect. Well, what does it mean to be perfect? What does it mean if you're not perfect? Well, if I'm not perfect, I'm a bad person. Mm-hmm. What does it mean if you're a bad person? You know, you're trying to get at what are these core beliefs that somebody has about themselves, and trying to get a sense of, you know, are these accurate beliefs? Are these reasonable expectations? All those kinds of things. But that's more of a longer-term process than something just in the moment.
Yeah, but I really think for most test anxiety, you have to do the longer term. There's not very much, except for a benzodiazepine, that works like that. And I just snapped my fingers. Tense and relax muscles throughout your body. Take a couple of slow, deep breaths, which is what you mentioned, and try to maintain a positive attitude.
So there are practices like progressive muscle relaxation. So people that are very anxious often have, might not even be realizing that they're tense most of the time. So we often have people contrast tensing their muscles, relaxing their muscles. You can even do things like associating words with that experience. So I might tense my muscles and then say relax and relax my muscles. And if you practice that enough, you can go into these environments and maybe say the word relax to yourself, and you've associated that with this relaxation. But it requires a lot of practice, right? So again, it's not something that happens in the moment. So even something like that is something that's going to require some practice.
Well, another thing, too, is avoid other students who make you anxious. Like, I know students who go to the classroom and they get there a little bit early or maybe a lot early, and other students create anxiety for this one, let's say this one individual student, because they're talking about the test, they're confusing that person, you know, by talking about what they would answer. I mean, I see that all the time.
Yeah, there's my wife studies children's and adolescents' peer relationships, and in her area of research, there's a construct that they call co-rumination, which is the idea of two friends kind of ruminating about negative things together, that actually that can be counterproductive in that if you're around other people that are equally as anxious, it can be counterproductive for you as well.
It's contagious. What about, do you allow this is a suggestion, if allowed, get a drink or go to the bathroom. Do you allow your students to get up during a test?
During an exam, you know, people are not allowed to leave the room once the exam is started. So, I don't think that's a really easy one or one that could be a regular
approach. When I first started working here several years ago, I was on call, and I got a call. And I may have told this story before because it's just an unbelievable story. I remember it was in Tin Hoor, and the student had gotten up during a final exam, and I guess he had a panic attack. And he ran, and he hit the frame of the door, and it knocked him back.
Yeah.
And it scared the professor so much, you know, that they called us.
Yeah.
But that's how bad it can get.
And that's tough when, you know, when somebody has an experience like that. Imagine then thinking about the next time you have to take a test. And oftentimes people who haven't test anxiety might have had a negative experience with a test, and then it's hard to get over that because there's so much anticipatory anxiety next test.
That's the key. What about eating something? I mean, you can't eat during a test, so to me that's, I mean, I guess it's talking about eating something before because you don't want to be lightheaded, dizzy. I'm foggy when I don't eat, and I'm hangry.
Yeah. I mean, I think it comes back to many of the self-care things that I talked about, you know, exercise, sleep, diet, all those things are things that are probably going to be helpful for just your general stress reactivity.
Yeah.
And, you know, you want to prepare yourself as much as you can for the testing situation.
Yeah, I mentioned, I think, during the break that we had a show on college students and sleep mm-hmm. with Dr. Jim Geyer, who is a local neurologist who specializes in sleep disorders. And I just think that when people come to college, I mean, I was like this, you just think, oh, I'm not going to get mm-hmm. to, you know, I'm going to just not sleep much and I can get by. And because of youth, they can for the most part. But I think for somebody who has anxiety, mm-hmm. period, it just makes it so much worse when you don't get enough sleep.
Yeah. I mean, I think the fact is if you're somebody that has issues with problems like anxiety and depression, you really have to make self-care a priority.
I tell people that all the time.
Actually, what they're doing now in Britain for people that have mild depression, the frontline treatment that they do at a national level is to do cognitive behavioral therapy with them and then to get them on an exercise program. And that's their frontline treatment for mildly depressed people.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, just for people that have milder versions, sometimes people have more extreme issues with anxiety and depression. We might say a medication might be what's needed. But for people that are just having some of these issues, we know that approaches like CBT
and
exercise can have a big impact.
Come in and they are adamant they're not taking medication. You know,
that's
just that. And I'm mm-hmm. like, hey, I'm cool with that. That's fine with me. One more question. Are there any apps that are effective in reducing test anxiety?
So I would look, I don't know specifically for test anxiety, but there are a number of apps that are out there for problems like, or for cognitive behavioral therapy in general. So if you are looking for any apps, I would try to look for ones that talk about approaches like cognitive behavioral
mm-hmm,
therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the principles that come from that would be, you know, integrated into an app, I think. And as mentioned earlier, approaches like mindfulness and meditation, there are a number of apps that are out there for that. You know, you could do briefly 5-10 minutes before an exam that
mm-hmm.
we know that has an impact on stress reactivity. So
there's an app that I mentioned today to a student that I love, and it helps you regulate your breathing. It's called My Calm Beat.
Hmm.
And it's just a simple exercise. It's almost too simple, but it works. And it helps people who are having a panic attack or about to go into a classroom to take a test just regulate their breathing. It's really cool.
Yeah, there's so many of these apps coming out now. It's hard to keep up.
I usually let students choose their own.
Yeah.
You know, or just tell them, go and explore and find something that you feel, you know, will help you. Because maybe sometimes what I like, you won't like. You know.
Definitely.
We're going to take one last break and then we'll come back for our final segment with Dr. Jarrett. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone.
This is Evan.
listening to Dr. Matt Jarrett. He's our guest tonight on Brain Matters. We're talking about test anxiety, and I want to pub your website, Dr. Jarrett. It's M-A Jarrett with two R's and two T's, MAJARRETT.people.ua.edu. What will people find on that website?
So I think there's some links to the research we've done, some of our ongoing research projects. We have a link to a separate lab website. We have links to our child and adolescent anxiety clinic, and also just some, we have a couple projects that are relevant to college students. One in particular is a group we're running for college students with ADHD, a mindfulness meditation group. There's some research showing that that can be helpful for college students with ADHD.
How do students get involved if they're listening and want to get involved?
You can feel free to, if on that website, you can send me an email if you're interested. It's my email is majarrett, JARRETT@ua.edu.
Okay. How many do you usually select to be in the group?
So far, we've tried to keep it sort of under maybe in the range of 8 to 10 students. We've started our recruitment process for this semester, and so we probably won't be able to enroll any new students at this point, but we'll run the group next fall. We're going to try to run it every fall. It's an 8-week group session.
That's fantastic. I think that would be a great idea for anybody who's suffering. I guess not really suffering. That sounds horrible. But has test anxiety. Cool, that's a good resource. And, of course, we've got the Counseling Center. If you feel like you need to get some counseling, you can come over to the Counseling Center. You can call 348-3863. I'll give some more information out about that in just a few minutes. Let's do some true-falses real quick before we finish. Students are born with test anxiety.
So I'd say false. You know, there's certainly a genetic component to anxiety. But what some of the research shows is that probably what's inherited is more of a general tendency to experience negative emotion. That's more tightly connected with genes than, say, a specific anxiety disorder or a specific type of anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Probably what we're seeing is people are just more prone to just have a tendency to experience negative emotion more than some others.
True or false? All students who are not prepared have test anxiety.
False. I think there are many students who are not prepared. They're cool.
There's no anxiety there. True or false? All students. Oh, wait a minute. Reducing test anxiety will guarantee better grades.
Not necessarily. Because
that's a trick question.
You know, sometimes students might be less anxious about the test, but they're not. They haven't really prepared for the test. They're not prepared, you know, for the content of the
test. Well, I call that the mother of all excuses because they've always procrastinated and gotten by and probably done fairly well, especially if they're on scholarship.
Yeah.
They're going to hit the wall one day, maybe their senior year, it may be graduate school.
And we see this a lot. We see this a lot with students with ADHD. They often struggle with these transitions, like going from elementary to middle school, going middle school to high school to college.
Yeah.
And sometimes we see it, I think, even in graduate programs, where, like you just mentioned, when students go from college to a graduate program, they're just more demands. And so
and they've used the same study skills.
Yeah.
They've never changed them.
Yeah.
True or false? Test anxiety is an individual problem that requires an individual solution.
I think you could probably think about that in different ways. And I would agree with that in some sense that you probably have to figure out what's going on with an individual person, what's making them anxious to come up with an individual solution for them. But I think there also are ways that, on a broader level, we could help students, like programs like Office of Disability Services, where it's not an individual solution. It's more at the institutional level that we have a commitment to supporting students.
That's right.
We could do this at the classroom level. We could do it at the institutional level.
Sounds good. This is great information, and hopefully we'll have this recorded, edited, and put on our website at the Counseling Center. It'll be on counseling.ua.edu, and you could just look at our homepage and click on the Brain Matters icon, and it'll take you to all of our, not all of them, but almost all of our past shows. Thank you for being the guest tonight.
No problem.
Fast.
Thanks for having me.
Let me make a few announcements before we finish up. Don't forget, I just mentioned our shows are recorded in podcast, and that website is counseling.ua.edu if you want to listen to past shows. Also, you can go to audioboom.com and type WVUA-FM to find some of our shows on that website. I want to mention that the Counseling Center offers QPR training upon request, meaning you need to call us and make an appointment for us to come out and do QPR training. It stands for question, persuade, and refer. Three steps anyone can learn to help prevent suicide. Do your part, and in 2 short hours, learn the warning signs for suicide and 3 simple skills of how to intervene, and save someone's life who is suicidal. To sign up for the free QPR Gatekeeper training for suicide prevention for your department or individually, or if you have questions about QPR, please contact the Counseling Center at 348-3863. Just like CPR, QPR is an emergency response to someone in crisis and can save lives. As always, I want to thank a few people who made the show possible. Dr. Lee Keyes, he's our executive director at the Counseling Center. Terry Siggers of the Office of Student Media. My production assistants, Jordan Williams, Natalie Beck, and Dorothy Beck, and my colleagues at the Counseling Center, WVUA staff, and, of course, my guest tonight, Dr. Matt Jarrett. Next week, we're going to have a really unique show with a guest who has experienced PTSD, and her story is a story of hope. Her name is Amy Ostreicher, and she's just a truly amazing woman with a fascinating story. Also, I want to thank those listeners who sent in the great email questions, and thank all of you for listening tonight. Once again, I'm Dr. B.J. Gunther, and this has been Brain Matters. We'll see you here next week on 90.7 The Capstone.
This show is not intended as a substitute for professional counseling. Further, the views, opinions, and conclusions expressed by the show hosts or their guests are their own and not necessarily those of the University of Alabama, its officers, or trustees. Any views, opinions, or conclusions shared on the show